Welcome to the FRSNU podcast with Reverend Rebecca. We're glad you're here. This week, Reverend Rebecca investigates moments of joy, where they come from, when they come, and how they can be evidence of a more wondrous presence in our lives. Her sermon is titled, Joy, Evidence of the Divine. Have a listen.
This sermon is dedicated to Linda Budenhagen, who gave me the inspiration. Thank you, Linda. So, what is happiness? What is happiness, and is it achievable? Moreover, is the pursuit of happiness really where we ought to be putting our efforts? Or, as people of faith and morals, are there other more virtuous pursuits that we should be going after? How does one define happiness? What does it even mean? I believe that the answer to that question about happiness, how do we define it, is unique to each individual. For some of us, happiness may be letting loose and having fun. For others, it may be laughter or glee. Still, others of ourselves would call ourselves happy when we are at rest, free of obligation, perhaps, or left alone to read our book or bask in the sun. It all depends. Joy, on the other hand, shares similarities between people, as it is less about I and what I like, and more about how I experience the world. It often comes as a gift or a moment of grace, and often at the least expected and almost always most needed of times. So I experience joy in two ways. One would be either as an orientation to life, a day in and day out way of living, and, this is not an either or, and joy are those moments of grace that come to us. I think when I think of joy, for example, of this feeling of euphoria that came over me one day. This is in my body. This was not a mental construct. I was sitting at a table with two of my colleagues, and we were discussing something that was not very euphoric. It was some kind of strategic conversation. And for about 4 seconds, I knew I loved them so deeply and completely. What made that particularly interesting to me is that I really didn't know them. I call that joy. And I bet if we talked, and when we talked, that you've had those moments yourself. So I ask, are they evidence of the divine? I have to wonder. Which begs the question, of course, what does the divine mean? That, too, we would probably answer individually. For me, the divine is not an anthropomorphic god in the sky or a czar of the heavens. It is not a god who allows bad things to happen, or even worse, makes bad things happen. The divine, as I understand it, includes a number of things. Two of them, and perhaps most important, are mystery or beauty and love. Mystery. A mystery and a beauty that defies understanding. And though it is incomprehensible, it is good. That is what distinguishes it for me as what I would call the divine. It exists, and it is not us. I mean, it is us, but it's more than us. Love, my other key definition, love, when I say that, is an animated force. It is actually something that exists and has energy, and it gets experienced in connection. Connection with other people, nature, animals. But again, it is real. Many people call this God. I do too. Love, beauty, mystery, goodness, unshakable kindness, good, orderly direction. It's the people who, against all logic, help another person. If you watch footage of the Boston Marathon bombing, it is the moment when the people who have finished the race and are safe turn around and go back to help another. What is that? So I ask again, is joy evidence of the divine? These questions about how do we define happiness and joy and what is the difference, and how do we define the divine, have taken up space in my brain for a very long time. One of the things that I know is that many, if not even most, of the most joyful people I know, and I encourage you, let a person or two come to your mind. Those people who it radiates out of them, right? This light, this way of being. Most of those people have come from or are even currently experiencing extreme adversity. It is illogical. It is counterintuitive. And I speak of this observation with great care and deep respect, as I do not in any way want to discount trauma, the horrendous and often generational impact that things like abuse and addiction and financial hardship and so many other things have on people's lives. I am in no way discounting that. If anything, I am honoring the resiliency, the spark of the human spirit. It is unbelievable. And I can speak too from some experience. When people ask me about my own orientation in life, and we sit and we talk a little bit, we learn that indeed that is much of what I had come through. And there is nothing that I feel more when I'm here with you and Sundays and day in and day out than pure love and joy. It defies logic. So it warrants repeating that joy and happiness are not the same thing. For example, when I say that people are joyful during or despite hard times, I am not saying that they are necessarily happy. Think of, again, your own self. One can feel and live in a state of joy or experience that moment of grace, again, two ways that it happens, and not necessarily be happy. And someone can be quite happy and not have the slightest idea what joy feels like. It's common for people who are going through deep grief to experience spontaneous breakthrough moments of joy. And oftentimes, it's those moments that get them through. David Brooks, in his new book, The Second Mountain, defines happiness as having to do with an achievement or success. And inherently, it is centered around one's self. He writes that joy, on the other hand, transcends the individual self, and it includes connection and relationship with others. He also claims that while happiness is apt to be fleeting, joy can become a way of being, an orientation in life. He writes, joy is a richer and fuller state beyond happiness. We are pleased by happiness. We are transformed by joy. For this to be true, and I believe that it is, joy cannot be necessitated on external conditions. We, of course, can experience joy in response to things outside of ourselves, like beautiful music, right? Witnessing love, seeing a beautiful sunset. All of those things can create joy. However, if we make joy contingent upon external conditions, we are destined to be disappointed. Brooks identifies five levels of joy, actually six. First five, in order, are physical joy, collective effervescence or celebratory dance, third, emotional joy, fourth, spiritual joy, and finally, transcendent joy. Physical joy is often experienced, for example, when you're in the flow. You might be jogging or gardening or worshiping. The second level of joy, collective effervescence and celebratory dance, happens when you move and dance with other people. Barbara Holmes describes this same phenomenon in the lives of Black people in her book, Joy Unspeakable, an incredible book. The third level of joy is emotional joy. That's what we get, the feeling when you, for example, hold a newborn baby or be with your pet or have coffee with an old and dear friend. The fourth and fifth level, both on the spiritual level, Brooks defines the fourth level as spiritual joy. According to Brooks, these are what are the peak experiences that happen. They are amazing and often life-altering. They often involve mystical experiences, not from movement or love, he writes, but from an unexpected contact with something that seems boundaryless, pure spirit. I think of a dear friend of mine who was in the middle of treatment for cancer. This is spiritual joy. When she told me that despite everything, there was a, and I use her word, there was a wonderfulness that was completely unexpected. Yet it was palpable to her. It took her by surprise, and it made no sense, and it got her through. She, by the way, would not necessarily define herself as deeply religious. It is not at all uncommon for these times of spiritual joy, counterintuitive as it is, to happen during difficult, painful times in our lives. Is this evidence of the divine? Again, love, mystery, beauty, goodness. Now, there is the risk of these peak experiences or moments of spiritual joy setting us up for years of searching for it again. So be cautious about that. The fifth level of joy is what's called, he Brooks calls, transcendent joy. It is a feeling, as in his words, of being at one with nature, the universe, or God. These moments may be gone in a blink of an eye, but they change us, and they stay with us for the rest of our lives. Now, my calling to ministry falls into this category. I was holding my daughter, who was an infant at the time, in my arms. We were in that blissful state of relaxed connection when I audibly heard and visually saw images. And the audible voice, or it's not, it was just, I don't, there's not a word for it. The thing that I heard said, "You will write my book." And I interpreted those words, "You will write my book," accompanied with the visual images, to mean that I would go into ministry. The thing about that is that the joy that happened in that moment was indescribable. It was like nothing I've ever experienced before or after. Now, you might be doubtful about this, that is what's called a mystical experience. I was very doubtful and shamed. I didn't talk about it. I hid it. I was skeptical. And yet, even though it never happened again, it was so powerful that I never, ever forgot it. And 20 years later, followed the call. 84% of respondents in a 2016 Gallup poll said that they have had such mystical experiences. 84%. And 75% of those people said they don't speak about it, for there is a societal taboo. Now, Brooks goes on to say that there is a joy beyond the physical, emotional, spiritual, and transcendent joy, and it's what he calls the highest level of joy, moral joy. This can become a permanent state of being. This joy, which he believes comes in the second half of life, we could talk about that. I believe it has happened to some people before, and I don't think it's a guarantee in the second half of life. Not that he's saying that, but it's an interesting conversation. So anyway, after you may have spent time pursuing happiness, right, you find a way to align yourself with what he calls your ultimate commitments. And then, and this is equally important, you give yourself wholeheartedly to those commitments. And as I look at some of you, I think of people who've done that and the joy that they live with. These are people who, he writes, are grateful to have found their place and taken their stand. They have found their inner light. Paula Poundstone came to similar conclusions in her book entitled The Totally Unscientific Study of the Search for Human Happiness. Now, this is a bit more irreverent and comedic, but in her experiments to understand what causes happiness, she found that exercise, including dancing, and spending time alone, do give you what she calls some heps, or moments of happiness, and that it even can stay a bit after it's finished. She also found that computers, including social media, getting organized, and watching movies all day do not overall bring you happiness. She found that helping other people and having a sense of purpose were definitely linked to happiness. And she says near the end of her book, "Happiness is more complex than I had realized. In the past, I had confused happiness with having fun." It behooves us to seek happiness. We just can't make it, I believe, the sole indicator of a life well lived. There are other things I think we would be well suited to also pursue. Satisfaction, serenity, purpose, right? Feelings of satisfaction or contentment for a job well done, peace and serenity as we spend time with loved ones or listen to familiar music, meaning or a purpose when we think of others, contribute where we can. They're all good companions, and when achieved, often result in the happiness we seek. Joy is in a different category, as I said at the beginning. It's a result of how we live day in and day out, and or a gift that's given to us at unexpected times, often when we need it the most. I want to close by sharing a little bit about the quote at the top of today's order of service. And it says, "Joy is an act of resistance." By Derricata Toy. It comes from a poem in which she is writing about her love for her goldfish. This love of a goldfish, not solving world problems or honoring the greatest people on earth, but a singular love of a goldfish that cost her $1.99. That she later spent hundreds of dollars to have people care for when she was away. That's what ultimately led her to joy. And as an African-American woman, she wrote this: "Why would a black woman need a fish to love? What does her love have to do with 500 years of sorrow?" And then joy, coming up like a small breath, a bubble. What does it have to do with the graveyards of the Atlantic in her mother's heart? And she said, "I liked him, the fish, for his tail fin, which was long like a mermaid's and flowed like a silver-blue ruffle in the water. A bit larger than you would expect a little fish's tail to be." Anne Morrow Lindbergh said, "For happiness, one needs security. But joy, joy can spring like a flower, even from the cliffs of despair." So joy in the worst of times, yes, it's possible. Joy when it feels like there's no way out, yes, it happens. Joy when we least expect it, absolutely. Joy as evidence of the divine, love, beauty, goodness, mystery, connection, yes. I believe that it is. May joy alight upon us all when we most need it and least know how it can come to be. Amen.
We hope you enjoyed this FRS in You podcast with Reverend Rebecca. To explore today's topic more deeply, consider the following questions. When have you been surprised by the feeling of joy? How do you distinguish between happiness and joy in your life? What is your relationship and reaction to sorrow? We'll be posting more FRS in You podcasts with Reverend Rebecca on our website, frsuu.org, and on our Facebook page. We'd love to see you in person at our services every Sunday morning at 10:30 at the First Religious Society Unitarian Universalist, located at 26 Pleasant Street in Newburyport. Or you can reach out to me, Nicole Salemi, Director of Community Engagement. Email me at nicole.salemi, that's Salem with an I, S-A-L-E-M-I, at frsuu.org. It has been good to be together.